The first case is 08-1562 in the matter of Meredith Poling, alleged delinquent child. Ms. Limerick.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Colleen Limerick, and along with Hardin County Prosecutor Bradford Bailey, we represent the state. We would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. We are here today asking this court to extend its ruling in AJS and find that the denial of a discretionary bindover motion is in fact a final appealable order from which the state may take an appeal by right. We are reminding the court that in AJS, this court did in fact find the state had a right to appeal the denial of a mandatory bindover because that was the functional equivalent of a dismissal of an indictment under revised code section 2945.67A, and it would forever bar the state from prosecuting the juvenile as an adult. And we would submit that that is the same legal analysis that would apply to the denial of the discretionary bindover.
That was a pretty key basis for at least my decision in the prior case. Explain why that is the same result here, why it would prohibit the state from pursuing a further indictment or further charge if this is appealed after the initial stage.
Yes, Justice Stratton, you're correct. That is an extremely important point, which we feel applies here as well, because once a bindover motion is denied, in this case a discretionary, as with the mandatory in AJS, if you proceed to the adjudication, double jeopardy will attach, and the state will be denied any meaningful remedy because we couldn't try the offender as an adult, even if we were successful on any appeal later.
So, are you saying then that the same analysis applies to a discretionary as to a mandatory?
Yes, we are. We submit that the same reasons for why there would be no meaningful review.
I think it's the functional equivalent of a dismissal.
Absolutely, we do.
What would be the standard of review if we agree with your position?
We think at that point you're still under the traditional abuse of discretion, but we would have an appeal of right to the appellate court.
And what would their standard be? Whether or not the juvenile court abused its discretion?
Absolutely.
And that's the only issue?
We do believe that that's the only issue regarding appeal of right or leave in this court. We are submitting that this case raises a couple additional questions that we're asking this court to settle the law on that will affect litigants throughout the state of Ohio. In particular, we are suggesting that in addition to the traditional abuse of discretion standard, as you just mentioned, we submit that the errors in the juvenile court that were reviewed by the Third District would amount to per se abuse of discretion. We're asking this court to lend guidance in that fact, that the fact of considering evidence outside the record, having ex parte communication with third parties, and reviewing and relying on extraneous evidence, such as the additional letters that came to the judge on February 27th, basically 2 weeks after the amenability hearing was under advisement, that in and of itself would be per se abuse of discretion, because this court and no other reviewing court can determine what exactly that evidence was when the judge met with the social services worker separate, without notice to counsel, without a record being made.
Counsel, isn't juvenile court inherently different? The interest to be protected of the child, and shouldn't a juvenile judge have fairly wide latitude in getting input from all kinds of sources? You're seeming to want to turn this into just an adult criminal deal in the juvenile court. It's different from start to finish, isn't it?
Justice Pfeiffer, I would agree with you in one point and respectfully disagree with you in another. Juvenile justice system certainly has a different goal as far as rehabilitating the child and focusing on the health, protection, safety of the child. But particularly when it comes to bindovers and serious youthful offender, with the passage of other legislation leading up to and most recently Senate Bill 179, which became effective January of 2002, with the increase of the potential penalties, the increases of, if you will, the criminal rights come into play. And particularly, and I go back to the Kent decision of 1966, where the United States Supreme Court said, if it is such a critical, important procedure being waiver, obviously where they could face adult sanctions, then it is critically important that the procedure measure up to due process of law. And that is one of our arguments today, that the actions of the juvenile court deprive the proceedings of fundamental fairness and due process of law.
Well, in this it seems that you're attacking the juvenile process altogether. I mean, when we talk about mandatory bindover, the legislature has said there are some crimes that if they are committed by a juvenile must go to criminal adult court. And that's where we came to the conclusion that a denial would be appealable because it was a mandatory bindover. But here, you're seeming to suggest that every case that involves a juvenile deserves the protections of adult criminal court. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm sorry if I misled the court. What I'm saying is, while there are different procedural aspects of the mandatory, once you found the age and probable cause for the offense, you're correct that this crime, murder, would have a mandatory effect for the bindover. The discretionary bindover has another step, if you will, the bifurcated amenability hearing. But we have the same legal analysis that once a bindover motion is denied, double jeopardy would attach, and we could not review that matter. I have no qualms with the legislation and the different setups between mandatory and discretionary bindover. But Senate Bill 179 says if a child is eligible for a serious youthful offender, which we really didn't get to in this case, but it is one of the issues we're asking this court to lend guidance on, is what, if any, weight is it appropriate for the juvenile judge to consider the possibility of the state filing an intent to seek a serious youthful offender disposition while they're weighing the factors determining the state's discretionary bindover motion. I submit that once a serious youthful offender disposition is sought, where the state files the intent or seeks an indictment, the statute itself says Criminal Rule 29 kicks in and all other adult rules and protections.
The offense here would be a mandatory bindover if the juvenile were 16.
16, yes, sir, or previously.
In this instance, the juvenile was 15 and a half.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
But it's still an offense that would have been a mandatory bindover.
If by age, if we had 16 years of age at the time of the offense.
This was a shotgun blast to the back of the mother's head.
Yes, execution style.
And let me ask you, the statute 934, does not specify that the state has a right to appeal the denial of a discretionary bindover.
No, Your Honor.
Should this be a legislative matter, or is this a judicial matter?
I believe it to be a judicial matter, because right now the statute sets forth the limited times where a state can appeal. Motion to dismiss, things of that nature. Bindover is not addressed in there, but the court's analysis from AJS addresses it exactly on point.
But to Justice Lanzinger's point, the statute says these certain cases have been classified and should be mandatorily bound over. But the legislature doesn't have a provision for this classification of cases that should be bound over. And the difficulty I'm having with your position is whether or not it's a legislative matter or a judicial matter.
Your Honor, I would submit it's a judicial matter because the legislature has spoke to it. As Justice Lanzinger pointed out, there's another step for the judge. If he goes through the amenability hearing, which occurred in this case, then he has, albeit discretion, at that point, the child can be bound over for this type of offense.
Counsel, I have a question on the procedure or how this case got here. As I understand it, you appealed to the Third District Court of Appeals, the juvenile judge's decision not to bind over. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the Court of Appeals ruled that it was not a final appealable order, so they did not have jurisdiction to hear the case. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I don't believe the Third District ruled that it was not a final appealable order. What we would submit, they erroneously decided that we did not raise any error at law that was capable of repetition, yet evading review. We would submit this question exactly is capable of repetition.
Right. But they did not rule on the merits of this issue.
Correct.
Correct. So I wonder whether is this case really ripe for our decision, or should this matter, if we decide there's at least a colorable argument here that there's a right of appeal or a final appeal order, that it should be remanded back to the Third District for their determination? Because as you know, in our system, it goes from the trial court to the mid-level appellate court and then finally to the Supreme Court, and we usually don't like to rule on legal issues until the other courts have already made that a determination in their opinion.
Yes, Justice, I understand that that's one position this court may very well take today. We're asking you to actually rule on the issue so that the Third District would have guidance if there's a remand here or remand to the trial court. We're asking you to extend AJS so there is clarity through all the courts throughout the state. We submit that we did fully comply with Appellate Rule 5C, but as you mentioned, that's a jurisdictional issue for the Third District Court of Appeals. And until they have guidance from this court, they may feel that they don't have the right to address that. So we are asking you to extend that holding.
In what way did the trial court abuse its discretion?
Your Honor, one of the biggest ways is depriving the proceedings of fundamental fairness and due process of law by considering extraneous evidence and relied on it. And it appears at page 12 of the juvenile judge's opinion, a quote that came from letters that he sought out and investigated and got additional information regarding Vincent Ciola, the counselor. Specifically, his entry refers to where he goes to school and his supervision, and that was no part of Defense Exhibit J that was admitted at the amenability hearing. Also, the juvenile judge used the wrong penalty for murder, and it permeated his opinion when he weighed the factors, and it also dovetails into our issue on whether it is appropriate for him to consider SYO while deciding the bindover, because he assumed that the SYO, or serious youthful offender, disposition would in fact basically automatically happen, and he weighed that in his opinion, deciding whether or not he should bind her over. And I submit that if this offense proceeds to SYO, it would be mandatory for him to impose that blended sentence, but that can only be initiated by the state. And we submit that it is premature to be relying on any SYO when no pleading is before the court.
So a big part of the abuse of discretion is to assume that the prosecution is going to weigh in with another level of charge that would hold this juvenile for a longer period of time?
Right now, as the proceedings are, Your Honor, the choice is Department of Youth Services to age 21 upon adjudication,
right,
or if relinquished jurisdiction, she could face life in prison. And those are really the only two choices. And if you read the juvenile judge's opinion, he specifically and erroneously says, life in prison would protect society, but it is not a sentencing option for the court. And then addresses other alternatives. Obviously, he decided not to relinquish jurisdiction. And we submit that that is an error of law that permeated this decision and warrants reversal.
So if I could go back to Justice Cupp's question, and the procedural posture is, you appealed it. I know there's disagreement as to whether you appealed it under a right or a discretionary basis, but the Court of Appeals considered a discretionary appeal, did not find it met their test, and denied the appeal not on the basis of a final appealable order, but on the basis that you didn't meet the test. And what you want us to do is find that it's an appeal of right and the Court of Appeals should take it. And if that's the case, then don't we send all these other collateral issues that you've raised back to the Court of Appeals for determination?
That certainly is an option this court may take, and if you would do so, we would ask that it be remanded to the Third District, but we would ask you to consider remanding back to the trial court for a new amenability hearing, because we have the ticking clock of the juvenile justice to lend any appropriate disposition for the child.
Ticking clock being just she's aging.
Yes, she's going to approach her 19th birthday in February.
Do you lose jurisdiction then?
We don't believe that we do, but obviously we lose any justice or penalty for the child, but that is a debatable point. I do see that I've used most of my time. If there are no further questions, I would like to reserve the balance for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Limbert.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, Ms. Limbert, Mr. Bailey. For clarification, appellee has never argued that the state did not have a final appealable order or that it did not properly file a motion for leave to appeal pursuant to Appellate Rule 5C, because it did. Therefore, those are not issues in this case. The sole issue that is proper before this court is how does the state perfect its appeal of a juvenile court's decision denying its motion for discretionary bindover after a finding of probable cause and a finding of amenability. The state has two options. They have either has an appeal as a matter of right, or there is an appeal through leave. The plain language of Revised Code 294567A does not give the state an appeal as of right. The legislature expressly enumerated the situations in which the state can appeal as a matter of right, and a juvenile court's decision to retain jurisdiction is not one of them. In delinquency matters, the state can appeal as a matter of right decisions which dismiss any or all a part of a complaint or a decision which grants a motion to suppress.
So you think 294567, if it had been amended or it said there was an appeal of right, then the state would be able to file under that statutory section?
Yes, Your Honor.
So are you contending this is a matter that the legislature has already spoken?
Yes, Your Honor, and for the remedy that the state is seeking, there needs to be legislative change.
Could there be an appeal by leave of court then, discretionary appeal?
Yes, Your Honor, and in fact, that is the remedy that the state is entitled to. Despite its contentions, the state has a remedy and a right to meaningful review through Appellate Rule 5C. Pursuant to 294567A, the state is entitled to apply for motion for leave to appeal any other decision of the juvenile court, which it did here.
Well, if we agree then that they may have a right by way of leave, and if the third district dismissed it as not being a final order, should we remand it to the third district and
yes,
let them consider that?
Yes, if that were the case. However, that was not what the third district found in this case. The third district dismissed the state's motion for leave to appeal and denied it because it did not find that it raised any issues capable of repetition yet evading review, because in this case, the errors that the state complained of were the alleged abuses by the juvenile court. And in reviewing the 11-page motion for leave to appeal and the 50-page memorandum in support of that, the third district found that the juvenile court did not abuse its discretion.
And is that the end of the matter as far as you're concerned?
Yes, Your Honor, it is.
So, and that's what I thought the posture of this case was. They really went to the merits.
Yes, Your Honor, they did review it.
And applied the proper standard of review. And so the question before us really is, are we going to reverse the third district and say they were wrong on the merits?
Yes, Your Honor. And depending on the type of, if this court wanted to issue an opinion and state that the state had to then address the issue substantively, I mean, that would be an appropriate decision if this court chose to do so.
Well, I think what the state really wants us to do is say not only do they have this discretionary appeal, but they have an appeal of right, an automatic appeal, such as we created in the mandatory binder. So they're asking us to go beyond the procedure that was followed and create a new right of appeal. Am I correct in that?
Yes, you are. Yes, actually, the state and its amicus urged this court to expand its holding in Ray AJS and apply it to this case. But their arguments fail for three reasons. First, discretionary bindover proceedings are vastly different than mandatory bindover proceedings. Second, In re AJS dealt with mandatory bindover proceedings. And third, the key issue in In re AJS had to do with the effect of a finding of no probable cause. In this case, the court found probable cause and then found that the child was amenable to treatment. In enacting our bindover statutes, the legislature created two different types of bindover. The first is mandatory. In mandatory bindover proceedings, the only finding that the juvenile court needs to make after a determination as to age is a finding of probable cause. If the court finds probable cause, the child is transferred to the adult system. Conversely, in discretionary bindover cases, the juvenile court has to go through a process before it can actually transfer the child to the adult court. That process requires the court to first make a determination as to age. Then it requires the court to make a finding of probable cause. After the court finds probable cause, it has to order a full investigation, including a mental examination of the child. After the investigation is complete, the court is required to hold an amenability hearing. At that amenability hearing, the court is required to listen to testimony, hear take in evidence, and then weigh 17 statutory factors to determine if the child should remain in the juvenile system. That is exactly what occurred in this case. The juvenile court reviewed over 700 exhibits, heard testimony from two witnesses, and issued an 18-page detailed decision of why it found that this child should remain in the juvenile system.
Counsel, in that process. The state finds difficulty with the fact that the judge consulted or some information that was not in the record, so to speak, that they did not have an opportunity to address. What's your response to that?
Well, my first response to that is that the information that the judge considered after the amenability hearing is completely collateral and administrative and did not go to the facts of this case. The fact of the amenability hearing, which was Meredith Poling amenable to treatment. So the information that the judge considered was actually irrelevant to its finding of amenability.
What about the statement made by the state that the judge was operating under an error of law as far as sentencing options?
I don't believe that that's dispositive in this case either.
But you agree with that the judge did, in his opinion, err?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. When it was citing to the appropriate disposition under a mandatory serious youthful offender sentence, as this court is aware, a child receives a blended sentence for juvenile disposition and adult. It misspoke when it said that the adult sentence would only be 3 years to 10 rather than 15 years to life.
And you don't think that laboring under that false impression of what the options were, so to speak, is material to the judge's determination?
No, I don't, because actually it didn't even have to go as far and as the state contends to even consider.
It didn't have to go that far, but it did, and that exemplifies the fact that the judge was laboring under a false information.
Well, I don't think that it was as material to the case as the error may seem to be, because in its opinion, it's 17 pages of that opinion has to do with the other factors, which are more actually statutorily required rather than worrying about what the adult sentence would be.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you about the opportunity for the state to appeal in discretionary bindover. Obviously, one way is to ask for leave for appeal from the Court of Appeals, which was denied. Is there any opportunity in the whole process, including at the end of it, for the state to appeal as of right the judge's determination on a discretionary bindover?
No, there's not. The only option the state has in this case or in discretionary bindover cases is to file a motion for leave to appeal. If the state wanted to, and if the state is correct in saying it has an appeal as of right, the statute revised code 294567A would need to be revised.
So the state's appeal on this is very limited, and the juvenile judge's discretion is very broad. Is that the bottom line on this?
I think that you're correct that the state's right to appeal is limited. That's the way our statutes and our law is set up. And similarly, I think that it's right that this court has widely recognized that juvenile courts have exclusive original jurisdiction and wide discretion in deciding juvenile delinquency matters. Similarly, courts of appeals have been afforded with the discretion to decide which cases that have been filed by an appeal appeal by leave have merit and should be warranted with further review.
And would you agree with the Court of Appeals that Bistricky is the standard, that the court should determine if the issue is one that's capable of evading of repetition yet evading review, and that's what a court should look at in granting such a discretionary appeal?
Yes, Your Honor, I would.
If
there are no further questions, I would just like to briefly conclude with stating that Your Honor O'Donnell was correct in stating that the remedy the state is seeking in this case does require legislative change. It would require legislative change to revise Code 294567A to give the state an appeal as a right of discretionary bindover motions, or it would require a change to our bindover provisions. It would require the legislature to revisit revised code 2152.12 and say that any child, regardless of age, would be subject to mandatory bindover. If there are no further questions, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Ms. Limerick, you've saved just a little more than a minute of your time.
I would first like to comment further on whether it's a legislative change that would be needed to give the state an appeal of right. I submit that 294567 is the exact statute for which this court analyzed that AJS had the right to appeal. Granted, mandatory versus discretionary, there are different procedural ways to get there, but it is the same legal effect. It would be the same functional equivalent of the dismissal of an indictment, because the state would have no other relief after the matter proceeded to adjudication. So when there's a suggestion by counsel that it would have to be a legislative change, there is no legislative change to give an appeal a right after a mandatory. That's why we feel the analysis from AJS is applicable in the instant case. The other comment I'd like to follow up on is the broad discretion given to juvenile judges in deciding discretionary bindovers. We acknowledge that it is broad discretion and generally very appropriate to do that. However, what goes hand in hand with broad discretion is the presumption that the evidence the judge is weighing was taken in a legal and non-irregular matter. This court said in State v. Roberts that a decision cannot stand if evidence taken outside the record is relied on. And that just goes with the due process arguments that we're raising. We've cited numerous cases in our brief, some from the state, some from other states, supporting that proposition. You cannot give unfettered discretion where the judge doesn't even have to follow the rules of law set forth when deciding such a decision of great momentous decision for the state. It is our one time at a fair and just hearing for this victim and this family, as well as a defendant. And that goes back from Kent up to present day. Therefore, we would ask you to grant the relief of remanding this matter to the juvenile court for a new amenability hearing, or in the alternative, back to the Third District Court of Appeals to rule on all the merits.
Thank you, Ms. Limerick.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.
Thank you.